Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Dechra half-year results presentation. My name is Dave, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. You will have copies of the announcement and presentation for the session this morning. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Ian Page, CEO, to begin today's conference. Stand by, thank you. Please go ahead with the call, thank you.
Thank you, good morning everybody. Thanks for coming down this morning and thanks for those that have dialed in. As you can see, it's been a strong financial performance, slightly offset by exchange rates, but Anne will explain all that to you in a little while. We've also made good strategic progress, and I'll run through the key aspects of our strategy towards the end of the presentation. So I'll hand over to Anne-Françoise.
Good morning, everyone. As you will have seen in our announcement this morning, we have made a good start to our financial year with continued momentum in Europe and also a strong performance in the US. And when you look at the numbers on slide two, you see it's a solid set of financial results at constant exchange rate, but there has been quite a strong impact from the currency, and in particular, the volatility of the euro, which we expect to continue in the second half. I will come back in the next few slides over the various elements of the P&L, so at this point in time, I will only highlight a few items, in particular, the revenue line at £101 million, which is an 11.4% growth, and here you can see at actual exchange rate, the growth is 5.2%. And underlying operating profit is £23.1 million, which is close to 12% growth. I would also like to point out the EBIT margin on this slide, and you can see the EBIT percentage has moved from 23.3% in the same period last year to 22.9%. Now, that may appear unusual, but shall I remind you that at the end of the first half last year, we did have the benefit of a one-off release of a deferred profit in stock provision due to NVS, following the divestment of services. Now that was about £1 million. So if you adjust H1 2013 for that £1 million, the EBIT margin actually is nearer to 22.2%. And therefore you can see we've continued to improve the margin as we had done at the year end where we were also at 21.8%. So it's a continued improvement in our operational leverage. Finally, we've declared an interim dividend of 5.12 pence per share, which is an 8% growth in line with our dividend policy. Our revenue growth of 11.4% really demonstrates the strength of our diverse portfolio and our diverse product range. And whilst we have had headwinds in FAP, which is still declining by 10%, this is more than offset by the performance and the growth in the companion animal portfolio, growing by 21%, equine growing by 23%, and also third-party manufacturing. Now, diet has shown a decline in the period, a small decline of 3%. You may recall that we were in the process of transferring to a new third-party manufacturer at the back end of last year. This was a complex transaction, a complex process, and we're almost there with the transfer, except we saw a little bit of supply disruption at the back end of the half year in December. We're expecting that the sales to come back and return to normal in the second half. To put our headwinds into context, and we've analyzed the various drivers of our growth, and you can see that as a total of our revenue, total percentage of our revenue, the FAP decline represents 1.9%. I'm on slide four here for those of you on the line. So the decline of FAP is 1.9% of our total revenue. If you combine that with diets, you can see that the overall decline has been 2.3% in terms of our headwinds. However, if you contrast that, it means the rest of the portfolio is growing by close to 14%. There's a strong momentum in Europe that represents almost half of our growth at 6.5%, particularly in cap and equine. And the US as well is continuing to perform well, half of the growth coming from the existing products representing 3% of our total growth, and the remainder of the growth being due to acquisition, Phycops in particular, and the relaunch of the Ophthalmic range at 3.1%. Now, I realize this slide might be a little bit complex for a Monday morning, as it's looking at different accounting periods, different exchange rates, constant exchange currencies. But if you step away from this complication, there are three key messages around this, this slide. The first one is we are seeing the momentum. The momentum is continuing to build. Last year, we had a pretty disappointing first half. We reported growth, decline, of close to 1%. But in the second half, we were seeing growth and momentum at 4%. And in this period, if you compare the period-on-period growth in this first half, we're growing at 11.4%. So we're very confident that there is momentum in the business. The second point I've mentioned quickly already, but the first half at 95.9 million last year was disappointing, and you may recall we had different phasing of export orders. The Netherlands was disappointing, and that resulted in a slightly lower performance than expected. And finally, when we look at the business now as a pure play pharmaceutical player, we're actually pretty proud that we've broken an important barrier, and in the last two accounting periods, we've reported sales over £100 million. So it's quite an important milestone for us as an organization. Moving to gross margin, the headline numbers may appear surprising, and you may, on the face of it, you may think our gross margin are flat at 56.4%. However, if you adjust for the one-off profit releasing stock that I mentioned earlier, you will see that behind that number, there's actually a 1% improvement in margin due to product mix, as we discussed last year, but also savings we are making by transferring to the new third-party manufacturer for diet. Looking at our segment and moving to Europe, you can see on slide 7 that the revenue and profit are really impacted by the exchange rate volatility in Europe. Our sales growth is close to 6% at constant exchange rate, whereas it's a small decline of 0.6% at reported actual currency. Now, the sales growth is really driven by the momentum in CAP, as I mentioned, but also Italy, our new subsidiary in Italy ramping up and bringing sales. But that also means that in Europe, we have added infrastructure, say, for instance, with Italian subsidiary, and that explains why the profit growth has been a little bit slower than the sales growth. And that means the EBIT margin is now 28.4% in this period compared to 29.3% in the prior period last year. The 28.4%, I will also remind you, is very much in line with where we ended the full year 2014. In terms of the U.S., needless to say, we're delighted with the U.S. performance, presenting a growth of 61%. And I've mentioned earlier that the growth was half 50% due to the existing products and 50% due to Phycops and the launch of Osphos and the relaunch of Ophthalmics. In the U.S., I'll show you in a minute, we've also continued to expand our infrastructure, and we're pleased to report that we are driving incremental sales, and it's not affecting the EBIT margin, and the profit of £5.6 million for the U.S. represents an EBIT margin of 35.2%, which is a strong achievement. Now, looking at our SG&A expenses, they've moved from £28.3 million to £30.4 million. And really what we have been focused on is allocating our resources behind our strategic growth drivers. In particular, we've invested in the U.S. In terms of U.S. infrastructures. We've added reps since the same period, a representative, sales representative, since the same period last year. That's an addition of close to £1 million. We're supporting the launch of Osphos, both in terms of headcount in the U.S. and in terms of marketing spend. And if I look as well at geographic expansion, we're setting up a subsidiary in Italy that has the establishing the infrastructure drives some costs, and a little bit as well as Canada, which will continue to ramp up in the second half. From an EPS perspective, the growth remains very strong, and it's a combination of organic growth, a little bit of a double-digit growth, and two 0.19 pence per share, but it's also the continued realization of interest savings. We repaid our debt in September last year, so we're seeing additional savings coming through, and we're seeing continued savings in tax compared to the same period last year. So what we have reported at constant exchange rate is a growth of 31% in terms of EPS at 20.51 pence per share. Now, briefly on tax, we had discussed at the end of our financial year 2014 that we had done quite a big review of our tax position, and we had looked at optimizing our tax affairs, which means that we've continued to realize savings in the first half of this year compared to the prior period last year. That has resulted in an improvement in the effective tax rate of 3.4%. which is mainly due to realizing tax savings on items like patent box, for instance, or innovation tax credit in the Netherlands. But we've also benefiting from lower corporate tax rates in the Netherlands, in Denmark and in the UK. So we've ended with a tax rate at 20.2%, which is actually similar to where we were at the end of the last financial year. Now, one final slide to touch briefly on the cash flow, and we have indeed delivered a very strong cash conversion in the period of 110%, which is above our target of 100%. I want to highlight at this point that some of this achievement is due to a lower inventory position than we would normally expect. Our stock levels were lower in terms of the phasing of our raw material purchases, but also due to the diet situation and a transfer to the new supplier. So that has impacted or benefited us for this first half. I also want to mention that we ended the period in a net cash position of £3 million, and that is the first time for Decra, so again, quite a big milestone to reach. So that's where we are in terms of financial results. And really, we're demonstrating that by executing our strategy in a consistent manner, we are delivering results. And I'm back to Ian now to cover the strategic progress in more detail.
Thank you. Well, the financial results are a result of us delivering our strategy, and there are four key aspects to our strategy that I think you're all aware of, and I'll just take each of one of those in turn and just give you a little bit of the highlights for the period. First of all, looking at portfolio focus. You know, we said within the year that we're going to have a real focus on three of our key therapeutic sectors, the equine sector because of the launch of Osfos, but also dermatology. We've had a major relaunch of our dermatology range, and we've also repositioned Vetoryl. And if you look in last year's annual report, you can see an example of the marketing campaign that we've put forward on Vetoryl. We've also continued to invest quite heavily in the online learning centre for vets that we call the Decra Academy. This is an excellent tool not only to get vets to better focus on our key therapeutic sectors, but also to drive sales within those sectors. And as you can see, the three categories have all grown in excess of 20%, endocrinology being, of course, the sector in which Vetoryl is sold. I think the other key point on our portfolio is that we continue to outperform the markets in which we trade. In terms of the US, the UK and Germany, we've far exceeded the markets. France is a little bit of a confused picture because a lot of our sales in France are diets, and the diets have gone backwards within the marketplace within the year. If you look at our companion animal portfolio, we've grown that by 27% in the period. So the number there on the slide is a little bit misleading, showing it only at 3% growth. We've talked a lot about antibiotics over the last few years. I think what we'd like to demonstrate from the slide on page 15 is that we are now beginning to see that in Holland, which is one of our key markets for antibiotics, that the trend is that it's bottoming out. There will always be a base demand for antibiotics. You're not going to eradicate disease. And I think it's a good indication with a market such as Holland that started the regulation a lot ahead of other countries that we are now beginning to see as reach a base level. The only other country that we have any major exposure to is Germany, and we are seeing a small decline in the German market, but nothing like as pronounced as we're seeing in Holland. And as I think I said at the year end last year, the reason for that is because there isn't the same overutilization of antibiotics in Germany as there was in Holland when they originally started this decline. Looking further ahead, more into the long term, you know, we do see a positive picture for this sector of our business. We are in the position of antibiotics that are a growing sector, which is water-soluble powders and injectables, and this is because you can more specifically treat smaller groups of animals rather than the historic way of giving antibiotics, which was through the feed, through feed mixes. So, you know, we are positioned well. And also you've got to bear in mind that a lot of countries where we've now started to put a focus, such as Italy and Spain and France, where we've just relaunched some of the farm animal products, that, you know, we've got very, very low market shares. So we do see in the sort of medium to long term that this part of the business can see some growth again. In terms of the pipeline, we've launched Osphos. It's very early days. It's very difficult to give you any feedback on the numbers at the moment, but certainly the feedback from the market has been exceptional. Every key opinion leader and every major equine veterinary centre that we've been to see has taken on the product, and of course the information will disseminate through the market because the equine fraternity is quite a close-knit community in terms of the veterinary surgeons that work within the sector. We've also launched a novel product, which I'll tell you about on the next slide, but we've continued to screen opportunities, we've continued to add depth to the pipeline, and we're talking to a number of other companies that have technology about new products to also enhance it further. Just a little bit of news on Zycortal, which is the brand we've given to the next canine endocrine product that we've been talking about for a couple of years. The dossiers are now completely filed. We've had the first round of responsive questions and there was no real deal breakers. Calf Spray, our new product, is a farm animal product, first new farm animal product we've registered recently. It's a differentiated generic. What do I mean by that? It was a generic in one country, which was an old-fashioned way of delivering this thiamphenicol antibiotic. What we've done is we've brought it into a new presentation, and we've been very clever by using that one national registration to get a generic registration across Europe. So in many respects, this will be seen as a new novel product. Antibiotic aerosols is something that we already major in. We have a market-leading product, something called Cyclospray, that sells about 3.5 million at the moment. So this will be a nice addition to the range. Just one little example of how we differentiate products. I don't know if you can see the strap line at the bottom of the advertisement on that page, but it says that you can use the can inverted. Now, I don't suspect any of you have ever tried to spray a horse's or a cow's foot in the past, but if you can imagine that you can turn the can upside down. A very small feature, but an excellent benefit that we can sell the product with. In terms of geographical expansion, as Anne said, that we're performing very, very well in Italy. We've now fully established the startup level of people that we require in Canada. We've got 7 full-time equivalents, 5 of which are in sales. You know, we really believe that having our own presence within this market can drive our position further. We're also making plans to start to market our own products in Poland. Our previous marketing partner in Poland was Novartis. Novartis, of course, have now been bought by Elanco, so we were able to terminate the agreement with relatively short notice. And we've also now appointed the general manager from Novartis Poland that is now going to take on Dechra in this country. It's a fairly low price market, but it's a growing market, and it's a market that we think we can add value to in the future. In terms of acquisition, PSPC was a business that had one product, Ficox. We're now selling Ficox into 1,000 more practices than they were originally. So we're getting to get a little bit of market penetration with the product. But also, and equally importantly, they had a product in development, which was a levothyroxine product. We have a levothyroxine product within Europe. This is a key endocrine product that we have now got completely developed and have launched within the US. Again, it really develops our canine endocrine portfolio within this key market. We are aware of a lot of the transaction prices that have been paid for animal health companies lately. We believe that the market has got a little bit overheated in the prices that people are paying for what are valuable veterinary assets. This isn't detracting us from screening companies. We have developed a lot of relationships over the period, which I think is the first step towards trying to find the next acquisition for Dechra. And finally, just looking at outlook, current trading is in line with our expectations. We will see Zycortal and Osfos, we still haven't got registered in the EU. That will appear, both those products we should get in the next 12 months. We're making good progress in Canada. Poland will be a nice addition to our geographical spread. And we have a strong balance sheet. And as I said a few seconds ago, we are screening a number of opportunities. And on that basis, we'll open it up to any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and want to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question.
Star 1, from the right.
just got a little bit confused on what you were saying in fact, in terms of balance and decline between Germany and the Netherlands. So was the most of the decline driven actually in the Netherlands?
Both. What we're seeing now for the first time is pressure in Germany from the government putting self-regulation on the German. The vets are self-regulating. I think the German market was about 7% backwards on antibiotics overall. Do you know the exact numbers?
Well, Germany was 15% back decline for our franchise. And in absolute number, Germany was also the most important. Netherlands declined by about the same amount as a percentage, but in value it was a lot less. And we can definitely see in our numbers the slowdown in the decline of the Netherlands. So yes, the Germany was the biggest impact.
Well, if you look at the graph, it's not stable. If you look at the graph, then it shows that there's still been a small decline.
Okay, but this is the overall market.
No, that's Netherlands.
That's Netherlands, that's the overall market. No, that's the overall market.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a confused picture when you get into such specifics. The reason why our performance was a little bit worse than the market in Germany was we did have a product withdrawal that was taken off the market. Not just our product, but generally. So we underperformed the market in Germany.
So, do you think this is now over?
No. We'll see slow decline, I think, for another couple of years.
Okay.
So we've certainly seen Phycox increase, sales have grown compared to where they were when we acquired the product. And we've actually managed to grow the franchise by over 30% compared to what the previous owner of the facility did. So we're very much in line with our expectation. Ian mentioned in his presentation having more access to clinics. And if you recall, one driver of the deal was certainly using our own infrastructure to access more vet practices. So it's certainly performing in line with expectation.
You mentioned Poland and Novartis and Elanco. Were Novartis distributors in any other region?
They were in Italy, of course, but we've addressed that situation there.
Nothing else?
Nothing else, no.
Any other similar situations arising where there's been corporate activity that triggers an opportunity for you?
No.
So what happens over the next 3, 4, 5 years?
We're researching 2 new countries. I think a lot of other countries outside those 2 countries will probably have to be through acquisition if we want to accelerate our geographical expansion program. So the way the process works is we register products in a country. Once we've got critical mass, there's enough margin in it that the distributor takes that will cover our own infrastructure costs, and then it becomes a very straightforward mathematical sum to make it evident that if you do it yourself, you're going to add to the bottom line. But I think there are more reasons that you'll want to control it yourself. Obviously, you get entire focus on your portfolio rather than being the tail end of somebody else's portfolio. So it is our intention to try and get into more and more countries, but we don't have that critical mass in too many more countries where we can just terminate distribution agreements. So we are increasing the number of people that we have in the regulatory department that will work on what we call our export business to try and increase critical mass. But I think in most other countries we will probably have to, you know, our target countries will have to either work a little bit closer with one of our marketing partners, for instance in South Korea. You know, we don't intend to buy business in South Korea at the moment, but we are working very closely with the distributor in South Korea to try and get more critical mass in that territory. But there are one or two other countries where we're looking at buying a small business to get a foothold in the territory.
So you're suggesting that future acquisition that will be bolt-ons rather than something major?
I think it's a little bit difficult to make bold statements like that in a meeting like this. I think it's more likely to be bolt-ons in the shorter term. I think you've also got to ask yourselves, who is there that is to buy that's another Vetex or another Eurovet? You know, our last two major acquisitions, there aren't many companies of that scale. You know, we do talk to a few of the companies that you would class in that sort of transformational type scale, but I think it's unlikely there'll be a transaction in, you know, the immediate future.
Could you remind us on the reintroduction of Animax and where that is?
The difficult question. I think that the simple answer is we're not entirely sure. We keep hoping that it will be for the end of this financial year, but the issue, if you remember, was to do with one of the APIs. It's a polypharmacy drug. It has number of components. One of the components was changed its location in China where it was manufactured, and the FDA still haven't approved the new site where it's manufactured, and it's just a waiting game. But we remain hopeful that we'll see it soon. Yep. Well, within Europe, there's no competition at all. Well, there's a human product called Florinef that you give on a daily basis. It's just a tablet. It's a human pulled down tablet. Zycortal is a sustained release injection, so you know you take your dog to your vet every 3 months, so it's going to be successful in Europe. In the US there's an equivalent product. I say equivalent, it's the same drug, but the license for the drug is intra-articular, where ours is subcutaneous, so it's intravenous, ours is subcutaneous, so it's a lot easier to dose. In terms of positioning, it will be a premium product because it's a once every 3 month injection, so it will be charged accordingly. Can we answer those sort of questions as and when we've launched it? We obviously have our forecast, but it's let's get it on the market first, Anne, if you don't mind. Well, every financial you measure, you could mention that in terms of product development, we tend to look at NPVs, but it isn't a balancing act. If truth be told, we are able to invest in most of the opportunities that that we encounter at the moment. So we're not actually. It's more about finding the right projects for us. You know, we screen a lot that may have had opportunities, but you know, it's in terms of the pipeline, it's really about trying to find the opportunities that fit within our therapeutic categories, or that are sufficiently large enough markets so they're worth taking a little bit of a gamble on.
R&D topics. I mean, it's quite pleasing to see Zycortal being filed, but I think expecting it. And it looks like the preclinical pipeline activity is expanding as well.
Yeah.
Modest R&D budget. You are finding it difficult to deploy your cash. I mean, would you countenance a sort of step up in activities on that side?
Well, we've discussed this with the board, actually.
As Ian said, in terms of investment, it's project specific. So it's not percentage of sales, and I'm sure you've heard us say that before. It's for each project and is there a return from that project. The apparent underspend this year is mostly driven by us having stopped the feline endocrine product that we had in the pipeline that we terminated last year. So, and that was going to be in clinical trials where we incur most of the spend. The pre-formulation early stage pipeline is all internal work. It's our own staff, you know, in the labs, looking at formulation, dosing, etc. And that's the cheaper side, or, you know, it's incurred at a much lower cost than the clinical trial. So that's, to me, that's why you don't see the spend. It's really a reflection of the current phasing of our project.
And we've actually just restructured the product development department that the previous head, Susan Longoffer, that's been with us for years. She's a brilliant scientist, and she's now spending more of her time on the preclinical work, and we've appointed a new guy about a year ago that's going to take on all the product development work. So we are actually, although you don't see it in the numbers, we are actually putting more resources into the development side.
Just think about time coming.
Mm. Well, it takes a few years. I mean, as Anne said, the big spend is actually your clinical trial, your in-field clinical trials. That's where we spend nearly all our external money. And when you get one project that's cancelled, such as the cat, it was a cat insulin product that we're looking at. When that was cancelled, then that's a big chunk of money that we're expecting to spend this year that we're not spending. Any questions from the telephone?
There's no questions coming through just yet, but if you have a question or comment, please press star one now on your keypad. Thank you.
Okay.
No, we currently have no questions on the phone lines.
Thank you. Any more questions? No? Okay. I thank you all again for turning up this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now replace your handsets.